Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 141, I was very lucky to have, very privileged to have, Damian Mark Smith. He is a multiple TED speaker, author, podcaster, and coaching entrepreneurs to success. I have to say, he was a delight to talk to. We talked about many things. We talked, one of the stories he shared was how he first got onto his TED Talk. His first TED Talk, which involved liquid peanut butter, and I got to say, very amusing it was. He is also training a gentleman who is the living embodiment of Mr. Incredible. We also talked about how he basically came up with the concept of his book, and how he can basically do create a book in over a weekend. All I've got to say, he is a very fascinating chap. I've got to say, he has the can-do spirit, and yeah, who dares wins. Great chap, love to speak to. So please enjoy the show, please subscribe to the podcast, and have a fantastic day. Peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 141. Wow. I have Damian Mark Smith on. He has been on, how can I put it? He has been on TED Talks more times than I've had exotic meals in far-flung places. He is an author, podcaster. He is a coach to entrepreneurs to help them succeed. How are you today, sir?
I am very well. Thank you, Miwa. How do you pronounce your name, sir? Miwa. Miwa.
Yeah. Yes.
Will that be right?
No. No, don't worry. You're not going to be the first or the last to get my name right.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm really good. It's a beautiful sunny day. We're out coming out of lockdown. And who knows what's going to be around the corner tomorrow, especially with football up the creek.
Indeed, yes.
Let's not go there.
This way, football's up the creek. But you know what? At least you've got another sport you can fall back onto. With your best mate. Like watching snooker.
Snooker, can beat a bit of snooker. We love a bit of snooker. We do.
Excellent. I have to ask, you, my friend, you went to university in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
In, photography and design.
Yeah, that's where it all started. Photography and design, yeah.
So I've got to ask, what made you sort of do this quantum leap from starting there, hey, I'm going to be a photographer, to where you are now?
Do you know what? It's actually really simple. I was, I've been an art director. I worked on Loaded magazine for a while when it took off. So that kind of gave me a bit of a green light into an industry that was, it was good fun. I enjoyed it. I worked at Stuff magazine. I was an art director at Yoga magazine, at Shares, and a group art director at independent magazines. I even looked after the Tottenham magazine, the fan magazine, and the Chelsea one, and the Arsenal one, and the West Ham one.
Yeah. So were you in Mornington Crescent when you were for Loaded?
No, we were in Kingsbridge Tower up in IPC. Group art director at independent magazines was great because we used to rock up to all the training grounds. And this was before football went, ballistic.
Yeah.
And, we'd just kind of rock up. And David Platt would be there hungover. And, David Seaman and Dennis Bergkamp would come up and say, can we help you? Who are you looking for? Oh, we're looking for Wrighty. Oh, yeah, he's over there. And it would be like that. It's not like it is now. It's completely different. And it was good fun. Harry Redknapp was our mate. We'd go to the pub with him. I've just bought Marco Boogers. Marco Boogers. He looked great on the video, but he's rubbish. He can't even kick a ball. It was just hilarious. And then I was actually having a conversation with a business coach once. And this was after I'd kind of come through my own kind of mental health issues and kind of discovered a way of thinking that was kind of really useful. And I was helping her. And she said, you should be a business coach. And I was like, why? And she said, because you know marketing, because you understand, the marketing, the design, the, kind of the funnel sort of aspect. And you're really good kind of with mindset. And I went home that day and set up a business. That was it. And I've never looked back.
Just
from running all the way forward. So I never look back ever, just in case they catch
me. No, do I dare look back? No. I've seen that Bible proverb where that lady turned to a pillar of salt. I'm not doing that.
Not looking back.
Forward. So, like, just after one conversation, you're like, that's it.
One conversation. I literally went home and just went set up a business. That was it.
Like, no fear, no hesitation. It was just...
sheer stupidity, yeah.
Wow. So, with your sort of who dares wins mentality, okay, what did you find was sort of the more interesting aspects, should I say, of the start of your new business journey?
Understanding how business actually works was quite interesting. You know, realizing that the best way to do it, I mean, this is the thing about entrepreneurship, which I've kind of learned over the years, is if you're working in a job, you get paid last. If you're an entrepreneur, you pay yourself first, right? That's the first thing. Or when he wants to come in, babe. And that was kind of a revelation, but then it was kind of all the stuff around that. So at the beginning you do everything, right? So you're, you know, the tea maker, you do the marketing, you do the design, you do the sales, you do, you know, all the whole lot. And then you have to start delegating. And if you're the sort of person that, you know, doesn't like delegating or likes, or is a bit of a perfectionist, let's just say,
you
find it very hard to do that. And actually that's when I'm coaching my clients, that's the hardest thing for them to do, is to kind of realize that they can't do it all. That it's actually not efficient to do it all. You know, you shouldn't be doing sort of menial 10, 15 pound an hour tasks if you can be making $500 an hour. Most of my clients are in America, so I tend to speak in dollars. So that was kind of the thing that I had to realize. It took me a few years, I have to say. It took me a few years to do that.
Yeah.
And I kind of freelanced for a bit as well. So I was working with the Entrepreneur Circle in Birmingham for a few years as one of their business growth advisors, which was great because that gave me kind of like a little bit of leg room to kind of learn about business. Because before, I mean, I literally went into the first day working there and I like read, I don't know, like 100 business books, like just before I started. It was like a 3-month break before I started. And I showed up on my first meeting with a bunch of entrepreneurs thinking, God, these guys are going to know so much more than me. And they really didn't. And I was shocked. I was like, oh, what do you mean you don't know what, you know, average customer value is, or, you know, bounce rate on your website, or, you know, opportunity cost of capital? Because I'd now learned all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I'd like gone and like read all this stuff and I learned it all, thinking that they'd all be really clever and like know all this stuff. And they knew nothing. They were like, how are you guys even in business still? And it's like, luck.
Okay. Luck.
Timing.
Praying. It's like sacrifice.
Prayer, yeah.
Child. What? No. It's like, no.
And it was such a relief, but it also was like, oh, there's so much room for improvement.
Yeah.
And that was the point. It was like, this is brilliant. And so I worked there for 5 years in the end, 3 years as kind of full-time and 2 years as like a subcontractor. And it was just brilliant. I really loved it. And, you know, obviously grew my network and sort of learned a lot about people and connections. And funnily enough, I'm actually just restarting as an ambassador for the EC again. And we're going to be doing some local meetings again. So all the people that I knew, I'm just kind of inviting them back and saying, come on, let's do some local meetings here. Because most of my clients are in America and Australia. So it's nice to do some local stuff as well now.
Yeah. Like this is the thing, like something when you said, yeah. You don't like when you got some entrepreneurs doing jobs they shouldn't be doing because it costs, they might be earning $500 an hour rather, but they're sticking with that. There's this YouTuber called Ali Abdal. He goes, yeah, he prices himself at £25, say an hour, like £25 an hour. And anything what's below that in value, he then just outsources it. Goes, yes, let me just outsource that and like keep going with that type of thing. One of the things I would be interested to know, because you say you've got a lot of American and Australian clients, and I would imagine, what are the sort of difference between Australia, America, and basically here when it comes to entrepreneurship, would you say?
I would say the biggest difference is attitudes towards marketing, funnily enough. I mean, a lot of the clients that I've got in America, I've kind of got them through being introduced because I'm one of the elite coaches for a guy called Ted McGrath over there. And he tends not to work with psychologists and psychiatrists, because in America they're very litigious about kind of mindset stuff, whereas in the UK we're fine with it. So I tend to kind of pick up the clients that have been working with Ted, and they kind of work with me personally, because it's fine for, you know, being in the UK to work with sort of mental health and mindset. It's not, there's no sort of litigation side of it. You know, we just mess people's brains up and send them off into the world, and that's fine. Whereas over there they get sued for it. They've got a very different attitude. So, you know, NLP over here is considered, you know, it's like you've used in the NHS, whereas over there they don't touch it. So but in terms of marketing, like over there they kind of expect to be kind of bombarded with marketing. And in Australia and New Zealand they don't mind it so much, whereas you come to Europe and they're just like, you sent me an email last week. Why are you sending me another one this week? It's far too many. You know, please, you send me one email. If I want to do something, I'll do it when I decide. And so we have that attitude. It's like, you send it once, and if it doesn't work, you give up on it and do something else. Whereas over there, they're just like, yeah, how many emails have you sent him in the last 5 minutes? 270? Send him some more. He hasn't opened it yet.
Just like,
don't let up.
Go, 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 go.
It is. It's that attitude. And they almost expect it. It's like, you know, it's almost like they want it. You know, it's like, if I want it, I want you to make me want it.
Yeah. No. I understand. Wow. That's crazy. Like, would you say, like, okay, with regards to everything which has gone on with the last year and a bit, of a certain particular, dare I say it, little bug which has come from the world of China.
Don't mention the C word.
You don't know these days. You don't know. like if I said Super League, I'm sure that would kick something off, but that's another story. But like, yeah, has there been an uptick? Have you noticed there's been an uptick with people sort of now going, now is my time to be an entrepreneur, or has it been kind of like, we need to sort of reevaluate things and what sort of training methods we need to put into place?
Yeah, there hasn't been yet, because obviously there's been a lot of people that have been furloughed. So, you know, given the choice of like doing some work and starting a new business, or getting paid 80% of what you're on and sitting in the garden doing nothing, I think most people chose the latter. However, they're going to be, they're going to be out of luck in the next few months, because the early adopters, the early movers, the ones who did do that, the ones who said, actually, this is my opportunity, I've always wanted to set up on my own, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, they've already done it, right? They've already done it. You know, they've joined Samcart or Shopify, they've found, you know, products they can sell, they've done some drop shipping, they've done the training, they've gone and sort of learned about real estate, or, you know, they're looking to buy businesses with a bit of cash they had in the bank. You know, because there's a lot of distressed businesses out there who are selling. So the opportunity is almost kind of gone for a lot of people. But the ones who have done it, the ones who are doing it, they're learning quickly, which is why online training, for instance, is so popular right now, because people are just thirsty for information. They're just like, okay, well, how can I actually set up a marketing funnel, for instance? You know, how can I use webinars to create a marketing system? How can I do YouTube ads instead of Facebook ads? How can I, Quora are doing ads. That's interesting. I didn't even know Quora did ads. Let's see how I can do that. And there's videos on how to do it. There's videos on how to, you know, do better copywriting. There's even artificial intelligence copywriting sites where you can join and it will actually create copy for you. There are sites like Grammarly, which will correct your grammar for you. There are sites like otter.ai, which will take your spoken word and put it into, you know, written format. There's basically tools for everything. I think the biggest issue for many people right now is overwhelm, because they don't know where to turn. They don't know which tools to use. They don't know kind of, what do I do first? And that's kind of where I come in, because it's kind of like looking at the tools and saying, okay, well, what are you trying to achieve here? Right. Yeah. That's the main thing. Okay. Not I need some money. Let me make some money. I need to make some money. So what are you actually hoping to achieve here? Okay, well, who are your clients? Okay, well, they're these people. Right, well, what do they want? Well, you know, they want my product or service. No, they don't. People don't buy your product or service. What do you mean? So they do not buy your product or service. They buy the picture it's creating in their head. They're buying the outcome, right? They're buying the prediction that it's creating in their heads. If it predicts something, if it predicts like a problem solved, if it predicts, you know, entertainment, if it predicts, you know, I'm going to learn something, if it predicts, you know, I'm going to be happy with this, that's what they're buying. Your product or service is the bridge to get them there. Oh, okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it like that. Okay, well, because they're all concentrating on how to build the bridge.
Yeah.
Rather than what the outcome is. Because that's the thing about marketing, right? You're selling an outcome. Right? You are literally selling it. You're not selling your product. You're selling an outcome. And people need to get their heads around that before they actually kind of move on to the next phase, which is, okay, well, how do I get people to see the outcome faster? That's where you're, that's where the juice is.
Mm.
Right. Because what they do is they go, oh, but I've got a very shiny object that does X, Y, Z. And it's like, well, but what does it do for me?
Yeah.
I don't understand this. Leave me alone. Yeah. As opposed to, do you want this thing over here? Because these people have got it and they're all very happy. Oh, yeah, they do look happy, don't they? Oh, I want to be happy like them. Okay, well, how do you get over there? Oh, there's a little pathway. It's called my product, and you can take it and you'll arrive here. It's, that makes sense. I'll have one of them. It's so simple. When you see it like that, but people don't see it like that. Of course, anyone new to business, they've got other stuff to deal with. So marketing is kind of like the last thing on the list. It's like, yes, marketing, dirty marketing. I'll deal with that last, right? Now, hold on a minute. I'd say, you know, if your girlfriend goes out, they don't put on their makeup when they get to the bar, right? They're like, huh? What do you mean? It's like, they're setting themselves up to go to the bar, right? Marketing is the first thing you do, right? Because you need an influx of potential clients before you turn them into clients.
Yeah.
Oh, but I've got to make the tea, and I've got to, you know, set my computers up, and I've got to do the IT, and it's all the stuff that we then get bogged down in before realizing that you don't have a business if you don't have clients. That's it. Business is all about one thing, value exchange. I give you something, you give me thank you notes. That's it. So it's kind of it's a little bit of a kind of a wake-up call, plus a bit of a, you know, you need to rearrange your time to make sure that this important stuff's done first. You know, sales and marketing is like the number one thing for most businesses. And it's the last thing that people like doing. So many times I hear my clients going, am I going to have to do any sales? Mm. Well, do you want to feed your children?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, yes. But if you're really not good at it, hire someone to do it. But you still need a decent funnel to get the right people in to make sure that they can convert them. Okay, what's a funnel? Yeah.
Okay. If you hear someone go, what's a funnel, you're like going, do you you got to hang your head down and go, oh, I've got a lot of work to do with you.
If they say, what's a customer, I just leave. Customer? What's a customer? Right, okay, bye.
No, I can't take your money, but it would just be unfair.
What was the question?
No, I've got to say, when you say talking about like marketing and sales, I always see, like, in my mind, and I've worked in sales for quite some time, like I see it as the two sides of the same coin in some respects. But the whole thing is marketing, in my opinion, helps grease the tracks. Sales just pulls the rock along, but without the marketing to grease the tracks, it's harder. And if you don't have sales to help pull it along, it doesn't really move at all. So if you don't have those two things working in unison, hey, you could be a magical company like Apple, which I don't know how they freaking do it, but it's taken
decades.
Yeah,
you know, and they got it wrong at first, you know, until Steve Jobs came back in and he cut the product line, because they were doing faxes, they were doing, you know, all sorts of printers, they were doing all sorts of stuff, and he'd been sacked from Apple, and basically he came back, he was asked to come back, and the first thing he did was simplify. And that's, again, it kind of talks to what I was just saying. It's like people have so much on their plate, they don't know what to do first, so they just kind of do the easy stuff. That's kind of how we work, that's how we operate. You know, if you've got like the big shop, or you just need to go out to get a pint of milk, you know, you're kind of, I just need to get a pint of milk, I just need a cup of tea, I'll, you know, have some cereal. You end up doing sort of behaviors that just make it easier, right? So this is the point. If you say to someone, it's like, you've got to redesign your business model, or you've got to start from scratch, right? It's a hard thing for them to get, but that's exactly what Steve Jobs did with Apple. And he said, we need to simplify and amplify. And they basically went down to, I think it was something like three products. And then focused on those three products, made them amazing, and then obviously took them out there. And that was like the first Apple Mac computer. Now he also went back to Bill Gates, and he said he asked for funding. And Bill Gates is a guy that actually really likes competition. He thinks it's valuable, and this is why Steve Jobs did it. Now I don't know whether he actually gave him funding or not, but you know, when he asked him, Steve Jobs said, "You need me, you know, so you need decent competition," and he was right. And you know, Bill Gates is an interesting guy. I mean, all these people that talk about this, like, you know, the vaccine stuff. It's like, why would you bother? Like, Bill Gates has got enough money. Why does he want to control the money system, you idiots? I don't really think he's going to spend like millions on computer chips just so he can control your piddly finances. Right, you know, come up with a better solution than that.
No, when you hear arguments like that and you're like, oh yeah, he's gonna inject us with chips to track us, and I go, okay, like, what's that little rectangle brick next to me right there? So I go, like, well, I can't go anywhere without my phone.
I don't think he needs to really inject us with the chip. He's like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, okay, ridiculous, but yeah.
Great conspiracy theory, come up with a better one.
Yes, I got to wear my tin hat. Well, sorry, oil hat. Tin just amplifies the waves, oil blocks them. But yeah, as you were saying, yeah, basically Bill Gates spending like millions to track it, it doesn't make any sense. But with harnessing competition, and I think with everything, that's, I think, some of the things which is going wrong with a bit of big tech right now, because they've sort of vacuumed up so much competition, it's kind of getting a little bit stale with sort of, I would say, innovation and development.
You'll be surprised. I mean, there's so much that's happening kind of behind the scenes with AI. It's kind of like AI has kind of created this a little bit of a gap, because you know, AI has been around for a long time. And you know, for instance, they created a computer about 15 years ago, I think, which actually had which could actually replicate itself and learn from like the kind of the energy cells that it recreated. It was, and it's been around for a long time, but it's not been that good, and this is the issue. So you know, I saw in the news yesterday, another Tesla car, you know, crashed, however no one was driving it. And it was going 60 miles an hour on a country road. You know, the two guys that were in it were in the back seat. So, you know, stupid deaths. Okay. You know, I don't really blame the car. Yeah, well, I blame the owner.
Oh, yeah.
I blame the car, blame the owner.
Trying to win that Darwin Prize.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, good riddance. That's all I say. You know, please stop spreading your genes if you do that sort of thing. So I think they were 60, so it was already too late. God, you might have to edit this. It's controversial. You'll love it. It's controversial. So that gap has been there. But the sort of technology that is actually happening is incredible. I mean, you know, there are, for instance, you know, chips you can, you know, literally kind of inject a chip that it's like got a little camera in it, and it can go into the cells and actually kind of see what's going on inside the body. You know, that's kind of the real stuff.
Yeah.
But it's kind of exponential now. So I think in the past probably 5 years or so, the power of the chips to actually do the computing. So for instance, Apple have recently released a new M1 chip.
Yes.
And it's way faster. That exponential leap is kind of the next, I think we've probably got three generations away before AI is going to be, I mean, it is in our homes anyway. Yeah, it's catching up, and you'll see it. By the time the end user uses it, it's been tried and tested for a long time. So, which is why, yeah, Tesla is kind of leading the way on that one in terms of the cars. Which is a hard one to start with, let's face it, you know, because of the idiots that are in there.
We can see the car will take us. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, but how many car crashes happen every day anyway? You know, hundreds.
Yeah, yeah. A lot.
And you hear about one with an AI car, and it's like, well, okay, what about the ones that didn't crash?
No. It's like, it's when you hear that, yeah, they were sitting in the back, and you're like, going, okay, you can only let technology carry you so far, because we've all been there where like a like something crashes or like it freezes and you're just like, oh, it's not working. It's not like we've like go through like a whole year, years, decades without sort of a bit of technology. Like I'm not doing this today. I'm not doing this.
And we all do that anyway. So days we wake up and we go, nah, I'm not playing today.
It's like, I've had enough. It's like, I'm going to watch the sport with my dog. It's like, yeah.
Netflix, here we come.
Oh, yes. Now, basically, there was this documentary I was watching called Coded Bias. And it was talking about like all the sort of different things, how technology, like how some of the technologies which are out there when it comes to recognizing people and this are getting a little bit more deeply flawed because the sort of like criteria which have been set over the time with all other sort of data points before have kind of like led to this sort of inherent bias, which is infiltrated systems and they haven't really sort of changed it. Like I think one of the ones which really sort of made me go, is when like they had this algorithm checking in Amazon people's CVs. And basically anyone, any like female name what came up, it ignored. But if they had any mention of like supporting a female sport, it ignored as well. So it was just like really like a very narrowed down, like going, okay. And they when they found out about it, it was like, no, we don't really do this, but you've been running this for a good year and a half or 2 years. What the hell?
Yeah, that's not good.
No, I've just, like, my thoughts are, like, when you have too much of a reliance on technology, it's a case of, without sort of doing the checks and balances, you can go quite wrong quite quick.
Too far the other way, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, with regards to, like, what you're doing at this present time, look, you've been, when I said multiple TED talker, like how many times have you been on TED exactly?
3 times now.
Okay, like right. How on earth do you get on TED in the first place? And how do you get to, like, you must be really good for them to like, hey, you know what? We loved what you did. Can you come back again and again and possibly again sometime in the near future?
Yeah. I mean, the first one was actually, it was on my bucket list. So it was on there anyway. So I was thinking about it and going, oh, I really want to do a TED Talk. And it was actually, it was an episode of Dragon's Den. And there was a guy on there who happened to be selling something that I really wanted at the time. And it was liquid peanut butter. Right. I was going through a real kind of like, I wanted to dip things in, you know, hummus and, you know, which I still do now. But, you know, it's like this was actually liquid peanut butter with all sorts of different flavor. And I was going, oh, my God, that's brilliant. That's genius. This is exactly what I want.
Mm.
And he didn't get the funding. But, you know, people go on Dragon's Den to really to get the publicity. I know quite a few people have been on there now. And it's mainly about getting publicity. Most of the deals fall through anyway. But it's money to kind of get out there and get their brand out there. And I actually put an order in to this guy and, you know, got a couple of pallets of the stuff. What? And obviously he'd been inundated and he was doing the kind of the, you know, he does everything in the new business. He takes the orders, demands the phones, does the marketing, does the packaging, blah, blah, blah. And like 2 weeks later, still hadn't received even, I think, something from, you know, a recognition that I'd even made the order. So kind of sent a bit of a snotty email. Now on the bottom of my email signature, there was the link to my first book called Do Nothing, which was all about how we trust our thinking at the wrong time and how to basically ignore it and wait for it to pass. And he saw that and he bought the book and he read it, but he was also happened to be the curator of TEDx Square Mile and then contacted me and said, hey, Damien, I'm the guy that runs the peanut company. I also read your book because it was on your signature. I'd really love you to come and do a talk at our next TEDx. So, of course, I was like, yeah, great. Where's my peanut butter? Yeah, all right, forget about that. Where's my peanut butter?
Wait a second.
And I did. And really what then happened was I saw how TEDx was put together.
Yeah.
Right. So they have rehearsals. You come down the day before they, you know, I could see like how it was organized. It was a very well organized event, by the way. And I thought, I can reverse engineer that. And so I actually was helping some of my own clients get TED Talks. And there is a kind of a secret formula, but it's kind of one of the things that I coached. I'm not going to give it away. but it works. And I kind of get my clients to do it. And I've had quite a few clients now who've done TED Talks. I've had a couple last week, 2 weekends ago, who did their ones in US. And I probably get about 2 clients a day asking me, you know, saying, can you help me get a TED Talk? So it's kind of part of my process now. So I do. Anyway, as one of them said, before I even did it, she said, can you show me how this works? And I just went, so I just basically got online. I kind of shared my screen and I kind of like did it. And of course, the application that I then sent in got approved. I was like, okay, well, that wasn't meant to happen. But, you know, what the heck? So I went and did that one.
It just applied as a lark.
The same happened third time as well. It was a little bit embarrassing because it was like, I'll just show you how it works. And I kind of did it again. And so I ended up, doing 3. And I think that's enough now. Anyone ever says, I videoed it. So I actually showed them how I did it. So if anyone wants to see that, I just said, I'm not doing it again because I don't want to do 4. Although I could go for a world record of doing TED Talks, couldn't I? The world record holder for the most TED Talks ever.
I wonder what that world record would be. It's like maybe
it's 3. I own it. Yeah, it was like, whoa, I didn't know that. So that was kind of fun. So, but yeah, I do on a regular basis. I get clients saying to me, "I really want to do a TED Talk. Can you help me?" I was like, "Yes, just don't make me do one."
I love it.
There's a simple formula, and I'm not telling you what it is.
I haven't asked for the formula.
Your listeners are going, "You damn you, you!"
Look, patience. I'll trick him into it.
If he gives that his email address, I'm trolling him.
So, 3 times, one time, just from the power of peanut butter, liquid. Yeah. Did you ever get your 2 pallets of peanut butter?
I did, and it was amazing, and it was lovely. There was sort of chili. I can't remember what it was like. Chili nut peanut butter was one of them. It was delicious, but they came in these really tiny tubs, and that was the bit that I think you got wrong. So,
You ordered enough for 2 pallets.
So 2 pallets worth of it, so it lasted me for about 10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it lasted a while. Good idea though. If I was to do it myself, I would have them bigger. But then retail is getting foods into shops.
Oh yeah.
Whew, hard job. That is a hard job.
Yeah, because Levi Roots, on Dragon's Den, that was, I think, the one where I think everyone kind of paid attention to. And them talking about how it, they had to basically go to all these different supermarkets, and then it still wasn't a done deal for a good long time. And supermarket space is just so expensive, depending where it is.
Well, funnily enough, one of my clients at the moment, I'm actually very proud of this guy, right? So he is the guy, and he's got this product, and I'm probably going to help him ship it in the UK.
Mm.
He is the guy that Mr. Incredible was based on. Yeah, and you see him and you go, oh yeah, he does look like Mr. Incredible. But he's actually a former world championship bodybuilder. And when you see him in the sort of early 2000s, he's amazing. I probably say his name. He's Jeremy Freeman, and he's one of my clients at the moment. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm kind of the real Mr. Incredible is based on me." And I was like, "Do you see it?" And he showed me the pictures, and I'm like, "Oh my god!" It turns out that his legal team, because he's really well known in America, his legal team, right, said you can't associate my name with Mr. Incredible. It was him that said you can't associate my name with Mr. Incredible. I just went. So I sent him an email yesterday. I said, just thinking about it, Jeremy, can we actually use the Mr. Incredible story? And he was like, oh yeah, yeah. It was my legal team that said that they couldn't use me. And I was like, hallelujah. Because now he's gone from his product's called Upgrade.
Mm.
And it's basically, he's a former biochemist before he became a world championship bodybuilder. Brilliant story. And everybody kind of knows him. He's been stopped by the cops and they go, hey, you're Jeremy Freeman. It's like, oh yeah, hey, yeah, let you off the ticket. Yeah, if you're not allowed to do that, they gave him a ticket. And he's got this like nootropic formula, which is called Upgrade, and obviously works because he's Mr. Incredible, right? So, and I just sent him this thing yesterday. Just like, can we use your that story? And he was like, oh yeah, we can use that. And I was like, marketing, hallelujah, here we go.
Yeah,
so I'm coaching Mr. Incredible. Beat that.
Hey, well, if you had Mrs. Incredible on the team, I'll be like, spot on.
She does look like her, actually. His wife does look a little bit like Mrs. Incredible. I've got to ask him that. That's a very good point. Thank you.
There you go. Glad to help. Glad to help.
You didn't think you were getting this morning, did you?
Well, no. Like, well, you know what? I'm always open to receive education. And thank you for these nuggets of wisdom which are coming my way.
Peanut butter and Mr. Incredible's coach. Well, what else do you want on a Tuesday morning?
Peanut butter and Mr. Incredible. That just sounds like a very wrong combination. Penthouse Forum presents. No.
He's definitely going to be in the 18 category.
Indeed. So, apart from, say, Mr. Incredible, and like, yes, and well, the gentleman with the peanut butter, what has been another sort of standout person you've helped coach there along the way, would you say?
I kind of like the Awaken Millionaire is a guy in Australia who's created a social media app called Awaken. And he's got a great story. He was he's a Brit, actually. He's based up in Wirral, and he created a bit of software that linked insurance companies to lawyers to the damage repair shops. He was working in one of those sort of environments, and he just went, hold on a minute, we need some software that kind of links all this together. And it was a brilliant story, actually, because he actually went to, it was at the time when Liverpool was a city of culture, he needed 100k to kind of build this app. Well, basically this software.
Mm.
And he went, they were handing out grants for the City of Culture. It was many, many years ago now. And they were like 50,000 pound grants.
Okay.
So he went to like one provider and they said, yeah, we'll give you 50K for, because if you build something that's going to give that city some employment, it's kind of worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And he needed 100K. And he went to one of them. They said, yeah, we'll give you 50K as long as you can give us the other 50K. What it didn't say is where they got the other 50K from. So, of course, he went to a different provider and said, can you give me a 50K? And they said, as long as you can give us the other 50K. So he just timed it perfectly. They both provided the 50K at the same time. Entrepreneurial thinking, right? Got the 100K, built the app. But then what he did with it after was actually genius. He gave it away to the insurance companies, right? He actually gave it to them and said, hey, just use this app. And, of course, they're using it for free. And it's doing the heavy lifting for them. So it's talking to the body repair shop. It's talking to the provider. It's talking to the person who's crashed the car. It's talking to the legal company. It's talking to the insurance company. And of course, the legal companies just went, they all started using it because he's given it away for free, right? So of course, like the really clever legal companies just went, hey, we need to buy this app. We need to have it. And he ended up selling his company because, like, for many, many years, he was, like, living off a credit card. He was just literally keeping it going, but he had this idea in mind. And then he basically got the offer he wanted, and they bought it for, like, 38 million.
Okay. Wow.
So he went from living off the credit card to 30 million. And even, like, his story about when he went in to do the deal, it was, like, talk about squeaky bum time. He was, like, and, of course, when they gave him the figure, he was, like, how do I not...
Under the table, leg banging away.
But, and also, it was also reliant on him actually proving in the next year that they could, it would bring in a certain amount of kind of business.
Okay.
But what he actually ended up doing was going back to his team and saying, right, we've got to double it. We've actually got to, like, you know, not only we've got to get to here, but we've actually got to exceed it just in case. And they actually, I think, like, trebled it. They ended up, like, smashing it. And he kind of walked away with, yeah, 38 million quid in cash, literally.
Nice.
Went to retire in Australia, took up surfing, hanging out in coffee shops, just literally just retired at the age of 38. It's something like 35 and 38. So it was either 35 million at the age of 38 or 38 million at the age of 35. Anyway, he's a young millionaire and he's surfing and he's, like, drinking coffee in coffee shops in Perth. And he's just kind of sitting there thinking, I'm getting a bit bored of this. has a near-death experience where he basically was like, he went into like an anaphylactic shock on the couch. And I still don't 100% know kind of how it or what happened. But he basically kind of had this kind of vision where it was like, God, I need to do something with my life. I can't just be surfing for the rest of my life. And then basically went back to what he's very good at, which is building software, created this software, which was kind of, it's like online digital marketing software, which is doing all right. And then he created this app called Awaken, which is doing really well. So yeah, I was coaching him, and he's a lovely, lovely guy. And I actually offered to do his autobiography. So we've been working on that together.
Nice.
I need to get him to do a TED talk, actually.
Like get him to do a TED talk. You should like fill in the application and just submit it just to see what happens.
I did mention him on my latest one, actually. My last TED talk, I did talk about him, so he is in there. Who else is I'm really kind of proud of? A couple of billionaires, but I can't really mention their names, I'm not allowed to. Sports people, you know, championship boxers, world boxing championships. Billy Schwer, he's based in Luton. He was one of mine for a bit. Who else? Some Olympic gold medalists, rowers, all sorts of very, very interesting people that you kind of bump into. There's one who I particularly like, a guy called Doug Burgess, who's a former world championship skier. He's selling land in Rusutsu in Japan. And he's got, basically Japan has got some of the best snow in the world, some of the best powder, as they call it. They actually call it Japao. His story is great because he was introduced to skiing by his dad when he was a youngster. And as an Australian, people don't think of Australians as like world championship skiers. And he actually took part as an amateur in the world championship skiing championships. And he's a very good skier. So his kind of story is he kind of knows where the best skiing is. And he's got this land. He's got 12 plots of land at the bottom of this mountain in Rusutsu in Japan, next to the golf course. So in summer, it's like the top of the golf course. And in winter, it's the bottom of the ski slope. So we kind of put together this kind of marketing funnel for him. And he's speaking with people at the moment. And he's just a lovely, lovely guy. So it's those kind of people, you know, every day's different. Always speaking with different people who are doing different things.
Yeah. Dare I ask, like, look, this is the thing. Like, you've spoken about the cream of the crop and everything like this. Has there been anyone who, don't say any names or anything, like where they've come through and went, I'd like to have some training from you? And you've looked and you've like deep dived and it's been like, maybe you should go back and do a 9-to-5.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. There are some people that will outsource a lot of their work. I mean, there's one lady in particular, I love her. I'm not going to mention her name, but she's based over in the US. She's actually an attorney. She's a very good attorney. She's actually very, very good. But she shouldn't be near computers. I mean, she just should not be near computers. Gavels, fine. Computers, no.
No.
And there's some people that really shouldn't do video. Not because of how they look or anything, but they're just really dull. So what I tend to do is say, look, what you really need is a voiceover artist and a PowerPoint presentation.
I like to be on the camera.
But I'll tell them. I'm brutally honest. I'm a professional ass kicker. That's what I get paid to do. If I'm not honest with them, what's the point?
Yeah. No. Yeah,
you got a face for radio. That's what I tell them.
You have a noble face. A noble face behind the screen.
Yeah.
Keep your face in shadow, then you'll be like, oh.
But I'm honest, you know, I'm straight with them. Yeah, there's no point in beating around the bush, you know. I think when I started, I was a little bit kind of, oh, can I say that sort of thing? But I just kind of, when you realize what people actually need is the truth, that's what they really need to hear. There's no point in sugarcoating it. You just got to, and you know, the great thing about what I do is I have experience. You know, I mean, I've got a coach because if I didn't, I'd be crap. Yeah, I'd be really bad. And you know, my coach keeps me on track. So I know the power of coaching and what it does for you, because you just don't see the wood for the trees sometimes. I mean, you know, if you're in it, right, you've got all this stuff going on, especially for clients as well. You know, I've got, you know, technically hundreds of clients. They're not all of them are kind of necessarily doing stuff right now, but they're kind of, you know, they've got stuff in happening, or it's already working for them and it's just kind of ticking along. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff to kind of think about, plus my own stuff. You know, you keep your funnel filled, and, you know, you keep talking to people about, you know, potential of what's going to happen next. I was speaking to a guy yesterday. You know, I just helped him. He's got this a fairly new business. It's been around 5 years, but what he's doing is brilliant. It's something called Humor Point. And he basically shows people how to create, you know, funny conversations, funny presentations. And I said, oh, this could be quite useful, because when I help people do TED Talks, a lot of the time people actually say, oh, yeah, so Ken Robinson, it's like the best TED Talk ever, the most viewed one, and it's really funny. How can I do something like that? And I said, well, be a different person. have a sense of humor. No, I'm not that brutally honest. he's created this kind of formula that helps people be funny. And I just kind of helped him a little bit yesterday. And I kind of mentioned about, you know, you need to get people to the outcomes and show people what it kind of feels like to have delivered a funny talk and, you know, have people entertain. Rather than show them the bridge, and that was really helpful. And then kind of in return, he's just like, oh yeah, I could pass clients your way, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's just kind of, it's more of a referral thing at the moment, but I do have marketing funnels. I do kind of show people how it works and kind of have my stuff out there. I'm working on YouTube ads at the moment, because I think that's, and I've got core ads as well, because I mentioned that core ads are quite interesting. You get clicks of like 22 cents on Quora that will cost you $5 on Facebook. But you won't get as many of them. That's the difference. YouTube ads will cost you more per click, but the quality will be better because people go on YouTube and they're looking for how-tos. Yeah, so it's kind of like Google Ads. They're going to, well, how do I do X? And if you can put your video in front of the video that tells them how to do it, it's kind of, it makes sense for them to see, because you've then got sort of between sort of 5 and 30 seconds where you pay for it after, is it 20 or 30 seconds? I can't remember. It's one or the other.
I think it's 30 seconds.
It's 30 seconds, yeah. So you basically got that time frame, because up to 5 seconds, if they haven't clicked off it by then, they're probably like a little bit interested. So that sort of gap between 5 and 30 seconds is kind of your time frame. And that's where you've got the opportunity to kind of really sell them. Now, if they go over 30 seconds, you might end up paying quite a lot per lead. But it's probably going to be quite a hot lead. So, and getting that formula right is kind of something I want to work with, because I don't teach people something I don't do myself, right? You know, if I'm working with a millionaire or a billionaire on their funnel, I need to show them how that funnel works for me before I go get them to like do their version of it where they're spending like tens of thousands on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might spend $1,000, they might spend $100,000, but they can afford it, I can't. Right. So, but I need to show them the mechanics behind it and show them how it works. So I basically test it all first, and I really want to get into YouTube ads, and Instagram's the other one as well, using something called ClipScribe. That's a nice little tip for your listeners and viewers if you're watching it on YouTube. ClipScribe is something you'll see it on a lot of videos, the square videos where they have like the copy at the top and the copy at the bottom. Joe Lycett does it on all his videos. Dr. Z does it on all his videos. The BBC do it on their videos. It's something called ClipScribe, and you just basically just put what the video's about. You see it a lot on Instagram as well. So I'm working with that, doing a few things around that and seeing how that works. And the other one is 360 video. So I've got my 360 camera. Because that's very popular at the moment as well. Basically, video, now that we've got 5G, it's going to be a game changer. When they roll it out to all the areas, it's going to be a game changer. Because even like a 90-second clip on 360 video is like 3.5 gig.
Yeah. You say 360, like, well, 5G is going to make it a game changer. How so? Is it just a case of faster uploads, or is it?
Yeah, uploads. Because, you know, I can basically control that from here. So I can basically be walking around. It looks like, you know, literally I'll be taking the dog for a walk and it's like, oh, I'm on a dog walk in Northampton. Right. This is really nice. Well, I can basically control it from that. And as a 5G phone, if I'm in a 5G hotspot, which I'm not here, unfortunately, but when I go to one, I can literally just go upload and your 3.5 gig goes in, you know, under a minute, which is kind of cool. Whereas previously you'd have to wait for half an hour. It just wasn't practical because you can't sit around, you know, in a 5G hotspot for half an hour. Sorry, you wouldn't be in five. Yeah, no, you get it. You can't sit around in a field for half an hour because the dog gets frustrated. It's like, I'll take me home and feed me, or let me go to sleep.
Yeah, trying to upload. Or both. I'm not.
So, So technology is allowing us to be more creative with what we do. And I think video is really key with that. People are starting to get really creative with video. I mean, you go on to, people are thirsty, really thirsty and hungry for 360 video. Because, you know, you can stick an Oculus Quest on there, which is like a cable free, you know, Facebook Oculus Quest, and you can basically go on a roller coaster, you can go skiing, you can go paragliding, you know, and you're kind of like going, oh, this is really quite cool. And I did that with my girlfriend, and I said, well, put this on and go skiing, and she like had this really bad reaction to it. She was like, oh, I really am on the ski slope, and really kind of reacted to it. It's getting really realistic now. And so you know, music videos, people are now starting to like rehearse in a room, right, with a 360 camera, and you can be in the room with the band. DJs are doing it with their DJ sets. People are starting to really kind of see the power of this. There's one of the most watched videos is actually the making of a music video, and it's done in like a California kind of house with a swimming pool and, you know, beautiful people all over the place, and it's no wonder it's like so watched. But you're kind of there. It's kind of, you're there in the video, and it's like, that's the next level. That's where we're heading. Being in the experience.
Yeah, I think with regards to 360 degree technology, especially after the year we've had, I think there's going to be a case of there's going to be a lot more sort of events, which are when we get back into the rhythm of meeting up and everything like this. But now events are going to have this online component. And I think they're going to have that sort of realm of, some events will have the 360, or it's going to be a case of how can you get people feeling like they're immersed in that event, even though they might be thousands of miles away.
Definitely. 100%. I mean, if I had a 360 camera here now, you could be, you know, you could literally hear the washing machine in the background like you can. It's like, it's very, very annoying. Never mind. I didn't put it on.
It's like,
I'm the dog.
Yes. It was, darn you, Winnie. Darn you.
It's like, fast asleep over there, bruising noodle. Yeah. So there we go. Hey, even more things on the menu. 360 cameras, billionaires, Mr. Incredible, peanut butter, liquid peanut butter, TEDx talks. God, your listeners they're cashing in today.
You know what? I like to just say, I try to bring their maximum value for when they are on, like when they like listen to me, but more importantly, to whoever my guest is. And right now, my guest is you. And like, so, you know what I mean? Bringing you, Max.
Who is this idiot?
Yeah.
Absolute idiot.
Oh, no.
You know, it's quite funny doing the humor point thing yesterday, because I did tell him, I said, I've done some stand-up comedy. And he was like, really? I said, yeah, I thought I'd give it a go, you know, because like my whole thing is around mindset and about how, you know, we trust our thinking at the wrong time.
Mm.
Wouldn't it be good if we kind of like tap into the good thinking and just leave all the crap thinking alone, right? Like, that's kind of it. I thought, well, what better way to test that than to actually like do some stand-up comedy? Now, I didn't know that comedians spend years like developing jokes. I'd been to the comedy store where, you know, like Paul Merton stands up and you give him an object and he makes something funny out of it. And I thought, yeah, I'll give that a go and I'll see how it works. Of course, it didn't actually go too badly.
Okay.
But I was surprised about it. But then, you know, I was like at the toilet in the break at, you know, half time, and the guy came in and just went, that was really good. You know, how long have you been working on your material? And I just went, since I stood up there. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, well, I just thought I'd give it a go, you know, just like come up with some funny stuff. And he just went, oh my God, do you know that like comedians spend years working on their jokes? And I was like, no, what, really? Said, yeah, they'll like take one joke and they'll try it in like different places and they'll forget, oh, I didn't know that. So then I actually wrote some material. I went to this event and I said, oh, I'll do a little comedy stand-up sketch. And they just went, really? But you're not even funny. And I was like, I know, I'm going to write something that's funny. And they said, oh, all right. And, you know, trepidation, they just went, and welcome on stage. And it was like a room full of people. And fortunately, because I don't remember stuff at all. My memory is like, I'm like a goldfish. Anyway, what are we talking about? No, I'm... I saw a Joe Lycett sketch where he's actually reading off the phone and it's like an email. And I just thought, oh, what a great idea. I can do that. So I set my routine up as like, I'm reading this off the phone. So I could remember it all. And of course, because I then wrote it and I had time to write it and kind of test the jokes, it was actually really funny and I had people in fits of laughter. So I went, right, I've done that. I don't need to do that again. Unlike TED Talks. So that was that. And then last summer I thought, I really want to learn how to play the drums. So I bought a drum kit. I got some drum lessons. I learned how to play the drums. I played along to a few songs and I sold it. And that was it, done. but I'm not, I don't want to learn how to parachute, how to skydive without a parachute, right? That, because that is a, definitely a once in a lifetime experience, and I'm not going to do that.
Hey, look.
Don't knock it. You might bounce.
Several times. Before coming to rest. That was funny.
So the humor point guy yesterday, this is what I was talking to him about. And I said, oh yeah, I've done some stand-up. He said, really? And I was like, yeah. And I gave him the story. And he was like, man, you're crazy. He spent years writing jokes and like learning the craft and blah. You just like get up and do it. And it was like, you're nuts. I said, well, yeah, I guess that is one way of looking at it.
Come on, look. I think it's quite in line with your character, because look, here we go. Like, yeah, you meet up with a friend, have a conversation with her, and then basically you went, oh, you know what? I'm starting a business. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, yeah.
Read a few books, got surprised at the reason why people were like not on like up to speed with this. And you're like, okay, carry on. Okay, yep. You get invited onto a TED talk from ordering pallets of liquid peanut butter. And then like you don't get on TED once, but you go back, you just like, oh, this is how you apply. Just off a whim, you get invited back, not once, but twice. So you've done three TED talks. And look, saying like, oh yeah, I did stand-up comedian like stuff. As a whim, I wasn't aware people worked on their material for years. I expect this from you. It's
like, look, expect more nonsense.
You know, like, I expect this from you. Look, it's like, yeah, I'm just like, I don't know if you're incredibly bold.
Or stupid. Yeah, well, I know
my I'm going with the former rather than the latter.
I something else I really wanted to do, this is when I was at university at Bournemouth, I really wanted to make a 147 break in snooker. I actually do really like snooker.
Okay.
I got up to 63 and it just got too difficult after that, because I just can't control the side on the cue ball. But you know, you have some things you have to practice at, right? You can't just go, oh, I want to speak Mandarin by tomorrow.
Yeah.
Without any, you know, lessons at all. However, ballroom dancing, that's an interesting one. My partner and I, we go ballroom dancing.
Right.
And you know, the first time that she actually took me along to a lesson, I was really scared. I was like, I really don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And at the end of the first lesson, I was like, I really want to do more of this. So, you know, we've done a couple of competitions, got a couple of trophies. Yeah. I mean, admittedly, there were only three people taking part and we came third, but you know, we still got the trophy. It's around somewhere. And we've been in a few shows at the Royal Durngate. You know, we've been in the Strictly shows, which is the charity ones. So we've been, so that was something that I actually could pick up a little bit more easily, because I think if you can hear the beat, you can dance, right? And I used to DJ, so I DJed at the Ministry of Sound Hotel in Ibiza. That was quite nice.
Who
did I DJ with? Frankie Knuckles. Who else? I've had a couple of my songs played by Pete Tong on Radio 1. His Essential Collection. I've actually got a tune out at the moment. What else do I kind of do on a whim? I'm a serial nutter, basically, thinking about it.
I wouldn't say a nutter. I would say, back in the day, they would have called you a Renaissance man, like for like doing all of these different things. So I have to ask, with all of these things you've done, and like, you know, I mean, look, going to come onto your books and your podcast by all means, but with all of these things you've been doing, what would you say is going to be, like you mentioned ballroom dancing as a small thing, but what's that new thing you might like hanging in the ether, would you say? What's that thing which you've been kind of like eyeing, but you haven't actually like gone to it yet?
Well, I've taken up tennis because we can play tennis, because I usually play a lot of squash, but we can't do that. Although I am playing today, but I've got a coach, so you're allowed to do that. And yeah, tennis is kind of up there at the moment because, and I did actually say to the coach of the club, so I joined the club, and I said, well, he actually approached me. He said, oh, you're that business coach, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, oh, I don't think I can afford you, but you know, can you give me some coaching? I said, yeah, if you give me some coaching. So we're now kind of doing a swap. So tennis would be kind of, I think, the next thing. if I could kind of get up to, you know, I don't know, Federer standard, something like that, I would be quite happy with that.
Yeah,
I could just have a game where I don't. I want to be able to hit a top hand backspin like consistently. There you go. That's my next thing. That's it. That's it. I'm focused on that now. That's all I want to do. Top hand backspin consistently over the net.
Okay. Nice. Top hand backspin.
And YouTube ads. There you go. And I want to nail YouTube ads. I've got a literally a training course that I've got sitting on my screen ready for after this. I'm just going to watch it on double speed. Because, you know, why watch on half speed when you can watch on double speed?
Right. Would you say you'll do a sort of dalliance into YouTube itself, like proper, like sort of like becoming, well, a YouTuber, either part-time or full-time?
Possibly. One of the reasons that I've kind of been waiting is to get, because the last time we were due to speak, we had the building work going on with the,
you know,
with this, and it's all kind of ready now. So, yeah, that's kind of on the list of things to do. But I kind of thought, well, what do I talk about? But then having had this conversation, it's given me quite a few ideas.
Oh, well, God, what don't you talk about? I would say, like, look, you've got a healthy chunk of life and a hell of a load of experiences you could draw on. Yeah.
Yeah, if I died tomorrow, I'd go up to heaven and God would be like, you've been busy, haven't you? So, yes, sir, actually thinking about it. Yeah.
Some slight impish behaviours in the Ministry of Sound, I see. That's another story.
That was fun. I enjoyed that. That was really fun.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know what? I think for your next book, you should call it The Ministry of Sound Chronicles. And see what goes on from there.
Actually, I have actually got another book lined up, but it's kind of in the offing. I need to do the audio book of Do Nothing first. So I've got the second book, which is The Entrepreneur Success Formula, is also available on Audible. I actually had someone do that. But my next book, hold on, let me just dig it out. What's it called? Can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, well, you've only been writing it for a healthy chunk of time, but yeah.
Oh, you keep going. I'll find it.
No worries. Now, with regards to when you do a book, because you say you're helping someone do their memoirs, was it Mr. Incredible? I can't remember.
Mr. Incredible. No, that was the awakened entrepreneur. That's the awakened millionaire. That's right.
Yeah,
that's Carl. Yeah.
Yep, Carl. Now, how long did it take you to when you went, okay, I'm going to do a book? How long did it take you to actually get your first book done?
Again, that was a bit of a weird one because I came up with the idea. I'd heard that Rudyard Kipling had written something like 28 novels by writing 500 words a day. And I thought, well, that's sensible. So if I just do 500 words a day until I'm finished, it shouldn't take me that long. It should take me about, you know, 3 months or so.
Mm.
So I woke up. The way it kind of actually happened was I was actually at a Daniel Priestley event where he was talking about key person of influence. And I was walking up the steps of the Mermaid Theatre in London. And the front cover of the book kind of was like downloaded into my brain. It was called Do Nothing. Great big red do, white nothing, black cover. And I thought, interesting title. I better go home and design that and stick it in front of my computer and kind of fill the book. So I did. I went home and I thought, I know what the book's called. I don't know why it's called that, but I know what the book's called. And I know what it looks like. So I kind of designed the cover, printed it out, put it literally above my computer, woke up the next day, had a double espresso, started writing. And I just kind of wrote, you know, I basically got to my 500 words, carried on, you know, first day, bit more motivation, probably wrote about 1300 words, something like that. Read it through, edited it, parked it, right? Because no one had told me how to write a book. I didn't know how to write a book. Next day, woke up, double espresso, woke up half an hour earlier, set the alarm, double espresso, went, sat down in my dressing gown, started writing, finished it, read it through, parked it. I did this for about 2 weeks and I noticed that I was getting quite a lot of copy, but I didn't have a structure to it. You know, I'd wake up one morning and go, oh, I want to write about my kids. Oh, I'm going to write about work. Oh, I'm going to write about sport. Oh, I'm going to write about stress. Oh, I'm going to write about relationships. Right. And I ended up literally kind of having, I kind of downloaded for about 2.5 months and I kind of counted it all up and I had about 65,000 words in total. Right? And I was like, oh, okay, I had more than I thought. So I then thought, I better start to kind of piece this together. And what I realized was I had chapters on relationships, parenting, sport, sales, business. And I thought, oh, I can just put it into chapters. Some of them were a bit light, some were a bit heavy. So I started to kind of edit it down. And I got it to a point where it was kind of ready. It was kind of 2.5 months later. And I just kind of put it out there. I kind of sent it to a few people and just said, you know, hey, what do you think of this? You know, one person in particular who ended up writing the foreword for the book, good Dr. Jack Pransky, he said, oh, this is amazing. You know, this is the book I wanted to write. How long did it take you? And I said, 2.5 months, but I did miss Christmas. And he was like, 2.5 months? It's taken me 2.5 years to write my latest book. How the hell did you do that? I just went, oh, I don't know. I just sat down and wrote it. And he just went, that's amazing. And I ended up going to a writer's conference, which was all about writing books. And I was sitting next to this lady who had written a book on how to write books. And it was 12 chapters. I told her my story and she just went, oh, I was like, what's wrong? She said, I'm going to have to stick an extra chapter in now. Why? She says, because you've just come up with a completely different way. And I said, well, I've actually come up with a way where you can write a book in a weekend. Do you want to hear it? She was like, oh, my God, what? I said, yeah, I got a client to do this, right? I said, all you got to do is on the Friday night, you just come up with a list of questions as if you're being interviewed by a local journalist, right? So, you know, what age were you born? I was born at an early age, 0. You know, who are your parents? What was your childhood like? How was school? What did you learn? What did you do afterwards? And you just basically kind of like come up with a list of questions as if you're being like on a long interview. You put it into order. You wake up on the Saturday, you set Zoom up. You're now going to have like not only the audio book and the video book as well, you're going to have the whole book. You set the Zoom call up. You put literally kind of a stuffed dog in front of you as if they're asking you the questions. You do it at an angle and you ask yourself the questions and you just respond with the answers. You talk it through. Now, the person who did this is actually a very good talker. So you can't just be like a yes or no person. You've actually got to come up with the answers, right? He recorded 7.5 hours of content in one day, like literally going through the questions. Yeah. He uploaded it to something called rev.com, although you can now use otter.ai, which is what the journalists use. And it puts it into the copy, sent it off to, I think, Upwork, which is Fiverr at the time, got someone to edit it, got someone to do a cover for him. And like literally by the Monday, it was kind of ready to launch. Now, that's how you can do a book in a weekend. Right. And again, using kind of technology, we can do that now. If you have to do a book in a weekend, you could easily do it. It's not that hard. Right. It's, you know, an audio book is 7 hours of content, 6 hours, even 4 hours. People are doing 4 hours content now. Well, you've just got to talk that through. Right. You've just got to do the editing and the design and all that sort of stuff. So that's how you do a book in a weekend. But if no one tells you how this works, like you just come up with innovative ways of doing it. This is why some of the best inventions ever made have been mistakes. You know, Post-it note was a mistake. The Mars rover was a mistake. It was all stuff that didn't go to plan. And they thought, well, we could use it for something else. That's kind of how I kind of discovered a lot of the stuff. And these kind of hacks are what I then share with my clients. And of course, in many cases, it's kind of useful for their businesses. The simplest one is like, don't do stuff that doesn't make you more than you should be getting paid. Well, how much is that? Well, okay, look at last year, right? Work out all the hours you worked and what your hourly rate is. Right. And for entrepreneurs, it's 24 hours a day because everything they do in their business is part of their business. So it really cuts down the amount they're actually paying themselves. Right. So most entrepreneurs are earning less than the minimum wage. So I said, OK, well, that's obviously not good enough. So how much do you actually want to be earning? And they give you a figure and you kind of work it through. Well, now you can work on your income generating tasks. Okay, so what are your income generating tasks? And working through the 80-20 principle, it's like, well, if 20% of your effort give you 80% of your results, just do more of your 20%ers, right? So work out what your income generating stuff is, do that, and then outsource the rest of it. Just that one thing alone will grow their business probably double within the space of 3 to 6 months. But they've got to identify what those bits are. So we sit down, we work through it, and there's ways of doing that. So just simple little hacks like that, which are really, I guess, common sense. But reverse engineering. It's like, well, hold on a minute. How do I write a book in a weekend? Well, you just come up with the idea and you practice it and it works, yeah? And this is a really good example of why things like Amazon Prime are actually really good for us, because they didn't just stop at, you know, next day delivery. They want, okay, what about same day delivery? What about 2 hour delivery? And they're working on a 20 minute delivery through drones right now. Well, that's because they're being innovative and they're coming up with ways of making it better. You know, all the biggest inventions that are currently working right now, Facebook, Uber, Airbnb, they don't own stock. Facebook doesn't own any content. Uber doesn't own any taxis. Airbnb doesn't own any hotels. You know, that's the new kind of way of looking at it. And this is why there's going to be a whole swathe of entrepreneurs who are going to start off the back of this pandemic, who are going to come up with different ways of doing it. People are going to be going into hospitality who weren't in hospitality before, who don't have that experience, and they therefore don't have the obstacles and the blocks, who will look at the way to do it differently. They'll look at it from, I don't know, from a dog walker or a hairdresser or a painter and decorator's perspective. They'll look at it and they'll change it. Yeah. So we're about to go through a new wave of entrepreneurship that's going to really change everything. And add that to the technology that's happening as well. We're in for a fun ride, my friend. We are in for a fun ride. Mm-hmm. It's all going to change. Next 3 years, the world's going to change exponentially, I think.
I agree with you. And like, this is the thing, when you said earlier, when people have been on furlough, they prefer to sit on like and be on furlough. But I think there are a number of people which are sort of sitting out the storm in certain jobs, because if you got a job right now, rather than sort of jump ship and change, you're going to have people, let's do that for the moment. But I think there's a lot of people really looking at themselves and really having that sort of conversation with themselves, like going, what do I really want from this life? What do I really care about in this life? Because of the way the sort of pandemic's helped sort of, I would say, really focus people's minds. I think that's the question. And I think many answers will be asked, well, come to be over the next 3 to 5 years.
There's also going to be a bigger divide as well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the top 80 richest people in the world own as much wealth as the bottom 60% of the poorest globally.
Yeah.
Right. So the bottom 60% globally, everything they own is as much as the top 80 people in the world. And what you'll find is the ones who've been sitting around being paid, right? They are going to be well behind the ones who just went, this is my opportunity. This is where I can set up something from scratch. At least I can learn about it, even if I don't set it up. That divide's going to get bigger. So the people catching up are going to be, they're going to have to really make it. But they've already shown them that they're lazy, right? So that's going to be the biggest issue. They're going to have to really pull their fingers out. The ones who started early, they've got the head start. The ones who are already doing it, right, in some respects, they've got way more of a head start. However, some of them have had to. I mean, we've got a friend here who runs the dance school. Mm. Right, within weeks, he'd set up a new business because he's an entrepreneur. That's what he does. He wasn't getting paid. Right, his dance staff weren't getting paid. That no one was getting paid. He just had rent going out. That's it. He had two schools. He had to sell one of them. He set up something called Strictly Home Improvements. Right. Okay, it was the thing that was allowed, is you can have builders and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he's a dance teacher, so it was kind of a bit of a joke, because he would, like, you know, be washing the roofs and the paving and stuff. He has never been busier, right? He is booked out until 2022, right, with Strictly Home Improvements. He's got people working for him. You know, he doesn't even need to do the dance school anymore. He does, because he's a former world champion and he loves it. And he will do that. But in terms of actually creating another business that's taken over, Strictly Home Improvements is doing it. Locally in Northampton, they're brilliant. They're absolutely amazing, but they're booked out already. He needs more people. But he's an example of someone who's entrepreneurial, who's decided, you know what? This ain't working. I'm going to do something else. Mm. And that entrepreneurial thinking is what us entrepreneurs, the ones who've always been like that, it's like, what can I do today? You know, who can I serve today? What problem can I solve today? That's where people are going to play the catch up, because they're not used to it. They're used to getting the risk taken by someone else. They're used to getting their salary paid by someone else. Well, that's now changing. Mm. There's an Oxford study that basically said before COVID that by 2030, 60% of the population will have to be working for themselves or as solopreneurs, which is a lot of people anyway. I think that COVID's just sped that up a bit. But yeah, it's going to be interesting times, that's for sure. And people like me, you know, are here to help. So,
but there you go. Like, hey, looks like the sun's going to shine and much hay is going to be made. Like, what?
Absolutely.
Because through the sort of the pandemic times, like I started my podcast, say, in late September 2019. And like, I was like, it's the classic start, pause. Start. Okay, we're off to the races. But like, yeah, I was put on furlough for up until October. Unfortunately, job went away, but things are coming back now, so things are moving in a more positive direction. But without that time, I would have said I did 110 podcasts in that time.
Brilliant.
And it was okay. I would not have necessarily, I'd have done the podcast, but it wouldn't have been as many and I wouldn't have learned as much. So, you know, I mean, it's really sort of helped me on that side. And I know people have gone through hard times and people have lost jobs, lost people they've cared about, but I'm not going to lie. It has helped me move this along a lot quicker than it would have been. So on that side, I am grateful for it, but I'm not going to sort of go, yes, it was the great thing, greatest thing since sliced bread.
Well, look, do you know what the number one thing, I mean, anyone who succeeded in business, the number one characteristic that's made them successful, do you know what it is? Every single one of them, millionaires, billionaires, trillionaires, the whole lot, the one characteristic that has made them successful is persistence. Every single one of them says the same thing. It's that I just kept going. There's nothing special about me. I'm not more intelligent. I'm not clever. I'm not more skilled. I was just persistent. I was dogged persistent, right? When everything was failing around me, when all of the signs said give up, they kept going. And that's the difference. And I think that's the bit that people are going to struggle with, because most people, I kind of jokingly say, the shortcut is the long way around, right? You're going to have to get used to it. There is no shortcut. People sell shortcuts, right? But there is no shortcut. That's kind of the secret. The secret formula is there is no shortcut. Yeah, have you seen Kung Fu Panda? Right? Yeah. The secret is the blank piece of paper.
Yeah.
It's that, right? The secret is there is no secret, right? You know, it's called Think and Grow Rich for a reason, right? You've actually got to sit down and do some thinking, right? You can't just manifest it out of zero. It doesn't exist. Right, you've actually got to then take some action. It doesn't just come to you. Right? You know, the reason that kind of visualization and all that stuff sort of works is because if we think about something enough, we'll end up doing something about it. You know, that's it. That's the secret of visualization. It's like if you keep thinking about something, you're going to end up doing it. If I keep thinking about taking the dog for a walk, the dog's going to pick up on it. you need to take me out for a walk. If I keep thinking about something, I'll do something about it. Or it doesn't mean as much to me. So, you know, for what is that goal? And you're absolutely right. Getting people to kind of really realize what that is for some people, because I'm not kidding you. For most people, they'd be happy doing nothing. Yeah. We could get paid to do nothing. People would do it. But there are a certain few who it would drive them crazy. I mean, if I literally retired today, it would drive me utterly crazy. I mean, I jokingly say to my girlfriend, it's like, I never want to retire. And she's like, why not? I said, because I enjoy myself too much. You want to just stop doing something you enjoy doing.
I think if you retired with all that that freeze time, I'm not too sure what sort of crazy you would come up with. You're just like, we're doing this. Like, oh my Lord.
No. He's doing the skydiving without a parachute. He's an idiot. He's got bouncy shoes on. He's trying it.
I've seen this hoverboard. It's like, what's with helicopter propellers? Yeah, let's go.
The only reason I haven't done bungee jumping or anything like that is because a friend of mine whose dad was an eye surgeon said the biggest cause of detached retinas was bungee jumping and, you know, jumping out of, he said, just don't do it. So I was okay. Cause I always wanted to, fair enough. That's off the cards. Don't want to lose my eyesight. My hearing's going already. I've got permanent tinnitus because of the DJing. So it just doesn't bother me.
Well, connected to the sort of the life of a DJ. You have now become a podcaster for the last two and a half years.
I did the Rethinking Living podcast, and now I'm doing the Rethinking Business one. I've actually got a load of recordings that I just haven't had time to do anything with. I've got tons of them all lined up, so I'm actually going to do one this week to release it this week. So yeah, that's been fun. Rethink Everything was good. Got up to 30,000 listeners, and then rethinking business is kind of, it's in its infancy. I once heard about podcasting is that you kind of have 30 to play with before it starts getting serious, because people only start picking up after the 30. And what I interestingly saw is like people starting offering to promote my podcast after I think it was 28. So yeah, that's kind of one of the things I want to do is get up on the podcast. You should come on the show.
I would be happy to.
Return the favor.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, indeed. Just give me a time and a date, and yeah,
awesome. Get you on.
I can do. There's a.
What else? Healthy, wealthy wine. That's kind of fun. So that's for people that like to stay fit, like to make money, and like to drink nice wine. So that's another one of my little projects that we've got on the go at the moment. So what else is going on at the moment? Oh, so much stuff. We've had the build, obviously, which has been quite insane.
With regards to podcasts, what would you say is the sort of key difference you have found? Because you're a person which I would say has explored all the sort of different realms of like the sort of social media realm to make things happen. But like with podcasts, what would you say is a sort of distinct advantage over other realms? Or is it just a case of it's just another avenue? How would you say?
Well, it's audio. And so the thing to do is to basically have it in all formats. If you can, have it in all formats. But I think people really like audio. I mean, I listen to audiobooks every time I take the dog out in the morning. And yes, I listen to them on double speed, but it means that I can, you know, within three mornings, I can have a whole book listened to. And podcasts are the same, you know, once you get into kind of a groove with a podcast, there's a couple of podcasts I listen to kind of all the time. One of them is Rob Moore's, The Disruptive Entrepreneur. I love that one. Tim Ferriss, another one. And I think once you kind of get that, the feel of what they're trying to, because I love like any mind and body hacks and business hacks. I kind of love that stuff. But audio, I think, is just a different format. And I think it's one that's, I mean, this is another reason why, obviously, you know, Clubhouse and Twitter, you know, they've launched their version of Clubhouse. So they've tapped into this, that, you know, audio is very popular, and it's accessible. That's the other thing. You know, we can be gardening and listening to audio. If we're watching video, and let's face it, you know, apart from, you know, you're a beautiful man, I look like crap this morning. So, you know, it's not very entertaining for anyone watching this, but listening to it might be. I hope so. So it has its benefits, put it that way.
Yep. No, indeed. Like, your check's in the mail for like calling me a beautiful man. Don't worry. Don't try to cash it yet. I'll just simply say that. Bouncy, bouncy. Say no more.
Yeah, I just think it's a good format. People are wanting to learn and listen on audio at the moment, and it's easy, it's accessible. It's not hard to put a podcast together. In fact, in my course, my online program, I even show you how to do it, you know, from scratch in under an hour. How to launch a podcast from scratch in under an hour. It's all in my online program.
Excellent.
How to write a book in a weekend is also on there.
Yeah, indeed. Like, would you, like, with regards, have you used, like, Clubhouse? Because, like, this is the thing. I'm a man who owns, how can I say, Samsung products and stuff like this. And, yeah, it's been exclusively on Apple.
On Apple, yeah.
Yeah, have you dabbled in it, or are you in the same boat as I?
I have dabbled in it for a little bit. I know people who are on there who are making very good success of it. The problem with Clubhouse is you have to have a lot of time on your hands to be able to actually make success of it. If I didn't like my dance music as much as I do, I probably would have it on in the background consistently, and it would have been a game changer. But I just love dance music. I just sit here with my tunes banging out on Kiss FM every day. So I just prefer it that way. Some people listen to classical music. Some people listen to, I mean, I listen to my audiobooks in the first thing in the morning, but I think if it hadn't been for that, I probably would have got into it. I mean, there's definitely techniques and how to actually kind of do it and make use of it, but you do need a lot of time. You need to be able to spend a lot of time in it. It's like golf. I don't take up golf because it's a long time out. It's like cricket. I used to play cricket, you know, quite well. I opened the bowling for Dorset in the Minor Counties League. But it's a whole day out. You know, it's literally a whole day.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that time anymore.
Indeed, indeed.
Short and sharp. I need to do things that are short. You know, like jump out of an aeroplane without a parachute. That's
it's definitely short and sharp. Terminal velocity and bouncing.
Painful too. You know, writing dance music. I don't do enough of it. I've got a track out at the moment, but you know, it took a little while to put together. And you know, that's kind of too. I've actually got my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter. She recorded this beautiful piece of singing, which I've got to make a bit of a track out of at some stage. It's absolutely stunning piece of vocal. So stuff. There's stuff to do.
Yeah. No, I hear you. No, this is it.
I've got clients as well, you know. I can't all be self-indulgent.
Well, what can I say? Yeah, indeed. Look, all I would simply say is, do your music recording as well. If you can fit in all in, upload it to Artlist or like Epidemic Sounds or whatnot. See if you can get a little bit of cream off of that. A little bit
it's
of
it's all on there. It's on Spotify. It's on Snapchat. It's on Apple Music. It's called Drop That Banger Hot. Drop That Banger Hot. And it's my pseudonym, which is DJ Kafe, and Chloe Clouds is the singer on it. And it's an absolute banger, right? I heartily recommend it. And I did the video as well, which is also very good.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Now, I have to reveal to you that I am a being of supreme cosmic power, and I can grant you one wish before you say anything. Because I know you. You're just rushing. You can't wish for world peace. You can't wish for like an eternity of wishes. You can't write something down on a list and go, I wish everything on this list comes true. You can't wish for COVID to go away. And what would be your one wish?
Let me see. I'll tell you what, my wish is that you get a million listens on this podcast and they all hear this one sentence which changed my life dramatically back in 2012. You don't have to believe every thought in your head. Like that to me was incredible because I had gone through so much kind of therapy where they were like trying to retrace my thinking and going, oh, this comes from your childhood. And where's all? And then that one sentence, you don't have to believe every thought in your head, it just changed everything for me. Cause I had like acute OCD at the time. And I was like, oh, if I don't do this thing, my family's going to die. And I just saw that thought as not having any power anymore. So if a million people hear that and go, oh, do you know what? That actually kind of makes sense. That's interesting. What's all that about? Then that would be my wish because it was a game changer for me. And then I ended up writing my book about it, which is called Do Nothing, which you don't have to believe every thought in your head.
Oh, superb. Superb. Love it.
And you get a million listeners as well. There you go.
It's like, oh, what can I say? It benefits me as well. I sense corruption in the system. But I'd like to say thank you for coming on today. You have been
an absolute pleasure.
Absolute superstar. Can you tell the lovely people out there how they can reach you, how they can get you, how they can find you on these interwebs?
Well, as you can imagine, I've got a number of different websites and email addresses and all sorts of stuff going on, but probably the best one is the Damien with an A at rethinkingbusiness or one word .biz. That's Damien with an A at rethinkingbusiness.biz. Drop me an email to that address and I will pick that one up pretty much most of the time. Or you can find me on Facebook, Damien Mark Smith, or one word, Damien with an A, Mark with a K, Smith with a Y.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you for coming on today, sir. I'd like to also say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors out there. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive bees you can be in this world, and then some. I see you later. Peace. And we are